coming to you live from the Morningstar Mission Sponsor Studios. This is Carl and Crew Mornings on 90.1 FM Moody Radio.
All right, guys, here we go in second hour. Keep it safe out there. Go slow. And if you're on the inbound Kennedy, you got no choice. So it should be good and safe out there. That's it. You know, I thought about this. It's one of the upsides. You got to look at the upsides of traffic in Chicago. Sometimes when you go slower, although there might be fender benders, they usually aren't too harmful and injurious to the body. No, I'm serious about that.
You're right.
It's not, you know, if you're going 20 miles an hour and you hit someone, chance of someone dying is slim to none.
Yeah, very true.
So there's some upside in everything, guys. Good morning to you. We're tackling below the waterline because unseen things matter most in life. Have you ever been on the run from the law?
No, I have not.
No.
Well, that surprises me for Allie.
It does. I can't believe.
Yeah.
I knew it took her a while to respond because I'm not sure she's being straightforward
here. The question was surprising. I didn't know that's what where you were going.
Have you ever been on the run from the law?
I thought I was one time.
Oh, yeah?
Only to find out it was true.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You tell me more.
Well, I'm going to tell you coming up here in a little bit. You know, I think, and this metaphor is going to fit, because if you're ever on the run, and not from the law, but just on the run, it's hard to hear good, wise counsel. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
When you're flying along through life, it's hard to hear good, wise counsel. So we're going to jump right in it this morning, guys. You get some Man on the Run music in there?
I will definitely find some.
All right, we'll have some of that coming up for you. Want to illustrate a point here about the power of one spiritual discipline that's not often used, but boy, it can be powerful. We'll get to that straight ahead. Jeremy Camp, getting started. Be safe out there. A little rain coming down. Was it raining hard on you guys this morning?
Yes.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Torrential downpour.
New to the show? We're glad you're here. You're listening to Carl and Crew Mornings.
We have a special guest. I want to introduce him. His name is Chip Ingram. He's a pastor, author, teacher for more than 30 years. The book that we are featuring today, Moody Publishers, it's called Yes, You Really Can Change, What to Do When You're Spiritually Stuck. I love the subtitle because this so many people can relate to, feeling spiritually stuck. Why do you think this is such a... This is sort of a pandemic, and that word's been used a lot over the last couple of years, but we have a pandemic in the church of people who really do feel stuck. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons, Allie, that, you know, if the research tells us anything, and if Jesus' words combined, you know, he said that it is when we're in his word and his spirit activates his word in our heart and our minds are renewed that life change happens from the inside out. Hmm. And, you know, what we know is that we're just bombarded with so much information and distractions. And I read recently that the average, you know, person between 18 to 30, and I would take it way farther, actually touches their iPhone up to 2,000 times a day.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, I think we're bombarded with a world that has us thinking everything. And I think there's no way to grow spiritually or experience intimacy with God apart from time with him, deep, deep relationships with other believers, and then using our gifts. And I think over time, you know, we just kind of get in a rut, and the pandemic certainly isolated us. And I think just multiplied the problems that we just described.
Yeah. Now, you're a pastor, you're an author, you've been doing this for a lot of years. Have you ever felt stuck yourself? Have you ever been in a place where you just felt like, man, I'm not growing? I mean, I hope that's an okay question to ask.
Oh, no. I'm actually pretty close to perfect, and I've never been stuck. I really don't have any issues in my life. You know? Oh, Allie, that's a great one. I don't know anyone at any level, at any maturity that doesn't get stuck. Mm-hmm. You know, let's face it, we have our own flesh that we battle. We have an enemy who's seeking to not just get us stuck, but destroy us. And then we have a world system that is designed to draw us away and seduce us away from the Lord. So yeah, I get stuck like everybody else. I got real stuck a couple times in this pandemic.
Oh, wow.
I got isolated and it was like, man, you know, I can't be with people. I was on my way to China when the pandemic started and had to cancel my trip. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I couldn't do what I felt believed, you know, God wanted me to do.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think we all get stuck. And I think one of the basic things is going back to the basics and realizing, okay, I am stuck. So, A, don't fake it. You know, don't just pretend. Because I think we do
that's
that
big.
A lot.
Ali. Yeah.
I think we just get stuck and then, you know, we just start pretending, well, it's okay. Or we get covered with shame or guilt. Like, well, gosh, I haven't read my Bible in a week. And, you know, God probably doesn't want to hear from me now. Mm-hmm. And, well, he's not going to answer my prayer, as though the reason he was doing it before was because you read your Bible every day and you never missed a day praying. So I think we got to get clear on who God is. Remember that he longs for a relationship, that we're his child, that we desperately need other people. And the goal of being in the scriptures is not to check a box. Okay, I read my 3 chapters, and if I stay on track, I'm going to read through the Bible in a year.
Mm-hmm.
It's far more important that God's word gets in our heart, that we're open and tender, that we recognize that we're his son, we're his daughter. He loves us. And so I think the first step to getting unstuck is remembering who God is.
Yes.
Remembering who he is, and then planting a promise. Draw near to God. What did he promise? He'll draw near to you.
Mm.
So just take baby steps toward the Lord and remember he longs for us to draw near.
And I love that you hit on these two options that we often default to, particularly if you are serving in any kind of ministry capacity or leading in some way. If when you get stuck, you said you either fake it or you kind of hide in shame a little bit. Coming up, I want to talk about that a little bit more because that may be where you find yourself today. You're a small group leader, you're a Bible study leader, you're a leader at your church, and you are stuck. And you're either feeling so much shame or condemnation, or you are faking it like you are at the Academy Awards winning an award. You are acting your way every single Sunday, and you can't hardly take it anymore. Coming up, we're going to speak to that with special guest Chip Ingram.
New to the show? Stick around for a while. We're Carl and Crew Mornings.
Special guest Chip Ingram with us right now, a pastor and author of a book we're featuring today. It's called You Really Can Change. Yes, you really can change. What to do when you're spiritually stuck. We mentioned the people who have been in the church for a while, maybe serving in ministry. You can start to fake it when you're not doing well spiritually, or you can kind of disappear and hide away in shame. What is the better alternative to those two?
Well, I think recognizing it's normal to get stuck now and then. One of the great encouragements I get from the Old Testament characters, but especially the Psalms David is like dancing one day and clinically depressed the next. If you read through the Psalms, and where are you, God? And what's wrong? And you didn't come through. And so I think the message is to just be real. Just be honest. A verse I memorized years ago, Psalm 145:18, the Lord is near to those who call upon him, to those who call upon him in truth. And so often, I've just had to, I take a walk and say, okay, I'm not doing well. I'm struggling. I'm battling, getting discouraged. And I can tell I'm going to be depressed soon. Or maybe I'm depressed. And it's like, okay, Lord, I'm hurting. I'm struggling. These are the thoughts that are going through my mind. And I know they're not good thoughts, but I'm going to bring them to you. And I think that's the first thing. And then I think we have to recognize that we get into patterns. And when we get into patterns, we get stuck. We tend to eat. We tend to log on. We tend to surf the net. We tend to do things that compensate. And I think one of the best things we can do, along with getting in God's word, is having that one close friend, someone, if you're in ministry, maybe it's on staff or, you know, maybe it's just a small group leader or hopefully it would be your mate or just a good friend. And just say, hey, can we get coffee?
Yeah.
I mean, I just need to unload and tell you, this is where I'm at and this is what I'm going through.
It's so good. I had one of those conversations not too long ago. I texted one of my mentors and I said, hey, I need to get together. And we sat down and I was like, you know what? I'm not doing awesome right now. And there was something really freeing about being honest about that. And then about, and then this person speaking truth into my life, truth of God's word. I was taking notes. I wrote down a whole long list of scriptures to look up later. And it's not like I hadn't heard these things before, but I needed someone else to remind me of what was true.
And I think sometimes we, you know, we get into patterns and it's normal. So we did a study at Living on the Edge, which is the nonprofit that I lead, and we do a lot with pastors here and around the world. And we had Barna do some research for us because we were really, really concerned about pastors. And we it was a big survey they did, and had over 50 different people, background denominations, but everyone self-identified as evangelical. I believe the Bible, you know, all the core historic doctrines.
Yeah.
And we found that only 22% of all the pastors ever opened God's word except to prepare sermons.
Oh, wow.
And I've just done a lot with pastors in the last 20, 25 years. Mm-hmm. And this is not condemnation. My heart just goes out to them. We all get into these doing stuff for God, and those basic things of, you know, I'm going to meet with God first. It's, you can't wake up and turn on Facebook. You can't look at the stock market. You can't, you know, turn on the, you know, whatever, the TV and wonder how the war is going. If we don't have time of silence and solitude, for me, I'm a little ADD. I have to write out my prayers in my journal, or when I'm struggling and I just feel like I'm not motivated. Okay, well then I'm going to, why? This is what I'm thinking. This is what I'm feeling. And yeah. Lord, I don't necessarily feel motivated every day to meet with you, but what I know is you know everything. And I think it's breaking through some of that lack of motivation or that guilt or duty. And, you know, the second half of the book talks about what it looks like to go into training. I think we think trying really hard and, well, I try to do that. There's a process by which God transforms us. And part of that is the discipline. You know, a disciple, there's a discipline.
Yep.
But it's not a discipline of white-knuckled, I know I can do it this time, and if I don't. It's not a performance. It's a rhythm that you start with baby steps, and you go into training. And I meet so many fellow Christian workers, whether they're full-time or not, who are just doing an awful lot of the work of God out of fumes instead of fuel.
Yeah.
And they get discouraged. I mean, really discouraged. And it just feels like the whole world and every expectations get so high. And honestly, you get really angry inside. And every phone call, and I got to meet with so-and-so, or I got to prepare this. And, oh, brother, we got people coming over to our house tonight.
Ah, yeah.
That's not God's way of doing ministry. And here's the thing, what I want people to hear. He's not down on you. He's really not down on you. When you feel like that, when you just feel the Lord is near to the brokenhearted, he saves those who are crushed in spirit. He delights to show mercy. Mm. And I don't want to just kind of go off, but if people would just, if they don't get anything out of this, it summarizes so much of God's heart. It says in Psalm 86:5, I love it, in the New Living Translation, he says, oh Lord, you are so good, so kind, so ready to forgive all those who call upon you for help. If nothing gets out of our time, Allie, for all the listeners that find themselves just catching us in this moment, it's that the Lord said, I love you. I'm for you. Just turn. Just draw near. And there's great hope.
That's a great place to land it. There is great hope. And I love that because we know that our God is merciful and that he's a God of compassion, there's not this long 20-step process out of the funk that you're in. I mean, it can, with a prayer right now, and I'm going to ask you to kind of close us in prayer here, Chip, but with a cry of the soul that says, help, God, I want to be close to you. It can turn around today. You don't have to have this long, protracted process out. Chip, would you pray for the listener who is stuck and just wants to get unstuck today?
Absolutely. Almighty and ever-living God, We thank you and we praise you that though you created the universe, your heart, your default heart is to be merciful and kind and forgiving, that you feel our pain and that you're compassionate. And Lord, you scream to us, yes, we really can change, not because we can do it on our own, but Lord, you promise that as we draw near to you, you draw near to us. And so I pray that for my brothers and sisters. I pray for the people that are discouraged and angry and hurt and resentful and feel lonely and they don't experience your presence right now. Lord, might they just turn and say, oh God, please help me. And Lord, I pray that they would do more than just seek for an emotional relief, but they just would open the Psalms today and just read them out loud and then call or text one friend and say, I need to unload what's on my heart. Lord, would you move brothers and sisters all across the Chicago area and beyond to connect with you, connect with a great friend. And Lord, would you give us the grace to find someone who's more discouraged than us and to reach out and to love them. I don't get how it works, but as we love others, your love flows through us. Allie and I come boldly and confidently, and we ask that in Jesus' name with great confidence. Amen.
Amen. Chip Ingram, our guest, what a blessing to have you with us this morning. The book, again, at moodybooks.com. It's called Yes, You Really Can Change, What to Do When You're Spiritually Stuck. The author, again, Chip Ingram.
Going from believers of Jesus to followers of Jesus, you're listening to Carl and Crew Mornings.
You know, we're called to run the race in such a way as to win the prize, right?
Yeah,
absolutely.
And this whole running metaphor is a very interesting thing because sometimes we're running with great confidence of where we're heading. Sometimes that running's kind of scurrying and frantic. And I think it's more often scurrying and frantic.
Yeah.
There was a time when Elijah was on the run. I'm going to give you that story. And let's do this. Coming up here, I'm going to tell you about the one time I was on the run from the law. One time. And you might say, Carl, you were on the, I knew that you lived a bit of a wild life, but you were on the run from the law. I was, and it was terrifying. I don't think I've ever shared this here before.
Wow, I don't think so either.
Yeah, I'll tell you about it coming up.
I'm a cowboy on a steel horse.
Okay, it's Carl and Crew Mornings helping you take your next step with Jesus. Man on the run, wanted dead or alive.
Thanks That's the right station.
Thanks for that, Young Thunder.
Hey, anything I can do to help.
Yeah, you're ministering to the body of Christ
yes.
today, baby.
Thank you.
Okay, I don't think I've alluded to it, but let me tell you the emotion behind it. Thankfully, God has blocked out a lot of stuff from my pre-Christ years. There's a gap of about 2 years that just kind of, boom, it's kind of washed over. Every once in a while, a memory will crop up.
Sure.
But this one I've never shared. I don't think ever here on radio, but I want to give it to you. And I'm going to cut to the chase of the emotion. So here's the bottom line. I was snorting cocaine pretty heavily, and I didn't want to be using my own money on my cocaine. I was always a pretty entrepreneurial guy. So I had run into a pretty serious cocaine dealer in Southern Cal on a triangle fare, LAX, Maui, Anchorage. And a friend of mine introduced me to a guy who introduced me to a guy. And I meet this guy, and I'm not going to say his name because this world, it's a small world out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it can be, absolutely. Yeah.
And this is a big time guy. The first night I met him, he had 1 kilo under each arm of cocaine.
Oh, jeez.
Now, it almost makes me kind of little bit right now thinking about it. But he had protections built around him. That's sure. all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah.
Law protections, by the way. Don't tell me for a second everything's just straight and clean out there, man. It can get sketchy. And I wasn't a big time dealer, guys. I want to tell you, I was just a little bit player guy, but I didn't want, I struck a deal with him. I said, hey, let's get a little bit shipped up to Alaska. Very dangerous. And I think I had in the first load something like 8 ounces, which isn't much. And actually quite shameful to even share this today. Interesting. So I got to make sure I don't get shamed to death here by Satan. Had that shipped up to Alaska and cut it up. If you've been set free from this life, you know what I mean when I say D-rings and triple beam scales. Somebody's out there going, oh, yeah, I got that one. And cut it up. I wasn't even good at cutting it up. I was kind of the entrepreneur guy. So I got friends, you know, did my buddy Dave, who is now born again, by the way, and I talked to him. He's living in the Carolinas. It's really funny. So he's helping me cut this stuff up. And then he had a few guys. I knew a couple of them that would go to the bars and they go out and move it for a buck and a quarter, a gram. And it would pay for everything I had and more, a little bit. And you need to know the context of this. In the early 80s in Alaska, I was talking to someone the other day that knew about Alaska in the early 80s. They said, oh, man, cocaine and they didn't say Crown Royal, but cocaine and whiskey was running everywhere, guys. If you weren't born again and in church, you were partying. That's just, and it really hurt us as a culture, as a generation, because it was bad. I'm going to get the second load shipped up there a couple months later. And again, it's not huge, but back in the early 80s, it was enough to get you some real time. Now it doesn't get you as much, but it was enough to get you 20 years in the clink. And I had the second load coming to Alaska and it didn't show up. And it didn't show up. And I thought, what's going on? Am I being stiffed by this guy or what's happening? So I got on a plane and headed down to LAX. And as I was flying down, it was flying up, crossed me in the air. And when it got to, by the time it landed in Alaska, another friend of mine, Dennis, had been calling down to the desk so many times to see if it was there. Because this is what guys, that it's called cringing.
Yeah.
The word is cringing. I'm telling you guys inside scoop about drug use. And he was cringing. He wanted some. And he kept calling down there. And he shouldn't have because it had my name on the package.
Right.
But it alerted the feds to this thing. And they got dogs down there. And they sniffed it out. And they popped the package. They also put him in the clink for a couple of months. Now, when this package was discovered, we didn't have cell phones back then. And I got down there and he says, I almost said the guy's name. He says, no, we sent it. It was on the plane last night. I'm like, oh, man. I call and call. No answer. And then I get a call from Dennis's wife, and she says, Dennis has been popped by the feds, and good chance his phone is bugged. Click. Can you imagine what that did to me?
Wow. Yeah.
No.
It's got my name on the package.
Yeah.
And the reason I share this story is because coming up here in a minute and a half, I want to tell you what it felt like to be on the run. And it can sometimes be a macro metaphor for a micro experience that all of us run into when we are feeling pressure and attacked and up against a wall and not knowing what to do. So coming up in a minute and a half, I'm going to give you what I did for about the next 4 weeks that just shows a mad scramble when there is no God in the picture. That's coming up.
Your spiritual pit stop to keep you going in the race. We're Carl and Crew Mornings.
All right, guys. Picking up this story here. If you're just tuning in right now, I want to just backtrack just for a moment and give this to you. If I can do this without crying, this is going to be a miracle here. Hadn't planned on even sharing this morning, but I just feel like it's the right thing to do. We're talking about today the power of silence to hear the voice of God, the power of silence, and then the discipline of silence to continue to hear his voice. I did this last night, by the way. Many, many years later, I heard the sweet voice of God last night in absolute silence. I wanted to go through this discipline myself. But cocaine user, early 80s, young man, early 20s, late teens, early 20s. And working hard. I'm successful in my job. I'm a superintendent for framing crews and working in the oil fields and wanting to transport some cocaine for my own use and not wanting to pay for it. So had a connection with a guy who was a big-time dealer, and he lived right there by the Marina Del Rey Red Onion, had a condo overlooking the beach, and he was a big-time guy and shipped up a first 8 ounces, wasn't busted, cut it up. It was mentioned in Triple Beam Scale and Deering's. I mentioned those names because anyone out there that knows those is going to really connect with me on this thing. And second load didn't come. I flew to LAX, took a taxi to this guy's home, only to find out it had been shipped out the night before while I was flying down. It was flying up. Had a friend up there that kept calling down there. He shouldn't have done it, but it alerted the feds. They sniffed it out with some dogs. They busted him, and it had my name on the package. Obviously, I didn't do time for this thing, and that's a whole nother story, but let me tell you what happened. When I got word from Dennis's wife that he had been busted, and she hung up because she said the phone is most probably bugged right now, Carl, and she just went click. I'm like, can you imagine?
That's terrifying.
It is absolutely terrifying.
Even now, it's got to trigger you. I mean,
I'm sitting here telling the story. Yeah. And I'm living it. I reached immediately. I grabbed everything I could because I thought there's somebody going to be knocking at the door here right now. And they weren't, but I ripped every page of names and numbers that I had that could have somehow implicated me some way out of a notebook that I had. And I ran into a bathroom and I flushed them down the toilet. And then I was just wringing my hands, pacing the floor, coming up with a plan. Over the next few days, I'm like, what am I going to do? Sleepless. I didn't want to fly back to Alaska, so I got a plan. After about, I think it's a little bit foggy, but 2-3 weeks, I got into a car with a guy and I decided I'm going to drive back to Alaska rather than fly in. I thought I'll go across the border that way. And I was in the middle of the night in the middle of the Yukon Territory, snows everywhere, and I'm tag team driving with a friend. It was absolutely silent. There's no radio stations I could tune into. We're in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, that's when I began to hear the voice of God. And I remember the gentle whisper of God telling me, Carl, it doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't have to be this way. You know, it would be about 6 months later that God called me out of darkness and into the light. But I can tell you with absolute certainty that the discipline of silence is a good discipline. Because it's always been in the silent moments when I've most heard the voice of God most powerfully. You know, God showed me grace in that season. But even up to the point of last night when I exercised the discipline of silence, God's voice speaks. And coming up in the next half hour, we're going to look at this from a prophet who was on the run. And the reason we want to talk about this today is that we're called to run the race, but sometimes a race we're running gets a little frantic.
Yeah, that's true.
Gets a little frenetic, and we don't know exactly where to go and what to do, and we wind up doing sometimes the wrong thing because we don't hear that still small voice of God. The story of Elijah running from Jezebel after he had had great spiritual conquest is a story that can really grip your heart in a lot of different ways. There's a lot of application points, but not least of which is this encounter that Elijah has with God in a cave. And he learned a lesson that day that ultimately led to him being raptured from this earth and passing the baton to Elisha. And I don't know if that would have happened if he hadn't heard the still small voice of God. Silence is a powerful thing. And maybe you need some silence today. Coming up in the next half hour, we're going to get into the story of Elijah, a prophet on the run. And it was in silence where God spoke.
Helping you start your day off right. This is Carl and Crew Mornings.
Coming up in a moment, we're going to talk about being on the run. One of the cool things about the story for me, being in Alaska, being on the run, is that God, in His grace, allowed me to not pick up that package that day. And by God's grace and His grace alone, I got word via my dad, who actually knew someone high up in the police force in Anchorage. Anchorage, small town, guys. Quarter million people.
Yeah.
And my dad was a really respected public educator, super respected. And so he knew guys, and somebody tapped him on the shoulder and said, "Hey, your son's got some challenges going on in his life, but we're not wanting to lock him up for 20 years. We're wanting to see this guy walking clean." The guy couldn't speak in spiritual language, but he could speak in street language.
Yeah.
And we're wanting to watch this guy walking free. By God's grace, God called me out of the darkness, tapped me on the shoulder one day, tears running down my face, every crutch kicked out from under me, and He just said, "Are you done yet?" And on February 11th of 1984, God changed me. God changed me. And oh, by the way, He spoke to me that day in the silence of a car with no music going and just said, "Are you done yet?" Is silence a good discipline? It saved me, and it guides me to this day. I'm a little bit rattled in a good way here after sharing that story.
Why?
Yeah.
Just takes you back to a time that
I would have to.
Ooh.
Time stamps me, Allie.
Yeah.
Time stamps me.
You know, it's interesting. Sometimes if you let your mind go back to a time in your life where you have some shame thinking about it, decisions that you made or any number of things. What do you do with that? What do you do with that in your mind when you go back there? Man, if you sit there too long.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I did just now, and I'm good. I just revel at the grace of God.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, just revel at the grace of God. God's grace is so good. So we're talking about the power of silence here today, and it's a spiritual discipline that's not used often. And I think by virtue of the fact that we've got phones that keep us distracted, we've got so much, man, I mean, we are just being bombarded with media and stuff. I mean, between it, the TV was bad enough, but now we've got these blooming smartphones, man. And these things are, they can hurt us spiritually, guys. I'm going to be bold. They can hurt us spiritually.
Yeah. I actually, speaking about silence and this, something that I am currently trying to work through is I get anxious if things are silent around me for too long.
Interesting.
I woke up this morning and one of the first things I had to do was pray because I was starting to get anxious as I was brushing my teeth because it was too quiet in my head. And I felt like I needed like a podcast or something to put on.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, absolutely.
I would say, Young Thunder, you've got a unique battle because you were raised. You don't know a world without noise.
No, not much of one. And the time I was alive before kind of technology really hit its stride, I don't remember much of it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, from what you can remember, there was Xbox or something going somewhere.
Always, yeah.
Yeah, that's another thing. I mean, you've got gaming. So between, it used to be TV and it was three network stations and PBS, right?
That was it.
Mm-hmm. But that could be bad enough. But then you loop in, I remember when Pong came out.
Sure, yeah.
I remember it well because we got a Pong unit and I was in high school. Wow. So, you know, that was a distraction, right?
Yeah.
And now we've got, Oh my goodness. And could it be that some of our even spiritual resources that we have, we might benefit from turning them off? And the answer is, yeah, there's a time when it's like, I don't need another Bible study. I don't need another podcast.
Yeah.
Even if it's Chuck Swindoll.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or Francis Chan.
Sometimes it's good to just be quiet.
Yeah. And the power of silence is seen in the life of Elijah. You might know the story, but if you don't, let me just give you the quick hit on it. The prophets of Baal were in a duel with Elijah. 400 prophets of Baal went to a mountaintop, Carmel. And it was a showdown, guys. I mean, this is MMA on steroids right here. I mean, this was a cage match. And they go to the top of Mount Carmel and they put this, Elijah said, let's duel well here. They put this bull on this rack and they decide they're going to see which gods can consume this sacrifice. And these prophets of Baal were chanting and chanting and chanting, and they're just going, come on. And they're cutting themselves, guys. They're bleeding.
Right. Wow.
And hundreds of prophets are chanting and chanting. And Elijah, he's got a great sense of humor. He says, hey, where's your God? They're silent. They must be busy.
Yeah.
Your gods must be busy. As a matter of fact, he says, they're probably going potty.
Yep.
Your gods are relieving themselves.
So rude.
It's so good. Oh, it's so good. Talk about in your face.
Yeah.
And then they were done and Elijah's up and Elijah says, pour some water on him. He says, pour more water. Pour some more on there. And the water filled the trench. So this thing was, I mean, soaking wet. And then he calls down fire and fire consumed that thing. Elijah won the day, huge mountaintop, Carmel top victory, and he heads down the mountain because now Jezebel has threatened him, and he says, as you have killed these prophets, because then Elijah said, kill these prophets of Baal. As you have killed these prophets, so I will do to you. Now he's on the run.
Yeah.
Now, some might say, well, he shouldn't have been on the run. He should have been able to tap into the victory that he just had and go, God is mighty. God is strong. I don't need to fear. Well, how's that working for you off your last victory that you had, you know? Right?
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
And it's a fascinating thing that we find here. But he ultimately goes down. There's a couple of movements here, and we'll spend a couple of minutes on this. But the first movement is he goes down by a tree, and he's exhausted, and God provides for him. He wakes up from a nap, and he sees a bunch of grub there. And he takes that grub, and he takes that drink, and then he goes to sleep again. He actually catches two naps. But here's what I want you to know. Rest, food, and drink can settle your basic needs, but they can't settle your soul. Have you ever noticed that, guys?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
How sometimes rest, food, and drink, they can settle the most basic needs, but they can't settle your soul.
Yeah, if it stops there, it's not enough.
Verse 9, it says, then he came to a cave and lodged in it. Behold, the word of the Lord came to him, and he said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? He said, I've been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. And I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it. And he said, go out and stand on the mount before the Lord, and behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore the mountains and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. And behold, there came a voice to him that said, what are you doing here, Elijah? He said, I've been very jealous for the Lord of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. And I'm left, and they seek my life to take it away. And the Lord said to him, go, return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus. And he goes on to explain that he's going to run into, ultimately, Elisha. But then God said to him this beautiful thing in this whisper. He said, there are 7,000 in Israel, Elijah, that have not bowed a knee to Baal. And every mouth that has not kissed him is 7,000.
Going deeper in our relationship with Jesus. We're Carl and Crew Mornings.
The power of silence.
Woo!
It's an amazing spiritual discipline.
It is.
Have you ever heard God's voice? Rob from Lake Geneva, come on in here, man. What's your story?
Good morning, Carl. I was in the car, sort of like what Jonathan was saying, and it was right after my grandma died, and she had lived a really hard life. And I was just crying out to God, how come she had to live such a hard life? And in a moment, God told me, if she didn't live the life she lived, your family wouldn't be who they are, and you wouldn't be who you are, and I love you the way you are.
It's pretty powerful, Rob. That's pretty powerful.
It is.
That is awesome. Rob, thanks for calling in this morning.
Great story.
Yeah. It's an amazing thing when God speaks.
And, you know, it's interesting because I remember hearing recently about who was the football player who did like the darkness retreat? And
Aaron Rodgers.
So retreated to like a really dark, and all of a sudden that became a really popular destination to go and kind of sit
It's booked all the way through the end of 2024.
In the dark and the quiet.
Yeah.
Wow. To try to get, because there's this sense that, man, I need the noise to stop. Maybe that's when I'll have some clarity. So it's a good desire, obviously, absent of God. Yeah. You're going to hear your own thoughts, and those can't be trusted. But there's something up in us that sort of craves this escape from the noise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You're right about that one. I hadn't thought of that. That Aaron Rodgers, you know, people were mocking him like crazy. The truth is, going into a dark room, my understanding is it's so pitch black, they have a restroom in there for you, but you have to fumble your way in the dark and feel around the walls to find a toilet.
Yeah, there's no outside light.
None.
Coming in at all.
It's absolutely pitch black.
Yeah.
Wow.
But if what you come out of there with is only the voice that's been rattling around in your head, in your own thoughts, that might not put you on a course for abundant living.
Mm-hmm. No.
But if we can hear the voice of God in those moments, Katie barred the door. Might take a couple more calls here. Have you seen God move your life powerfully in silence? 312-274-9624. Different kind of gear to our morning here so far.
It really is. But hey, silence is golden. Remember that quote?
Yeah.
Silence is golden. What did God show you in the silence and it changed you? 312-274-9624. Alani from Chicago, thanks for calling in. Tell us your story.
Hi, good morning. God bless. So about 28 years ago, my mom was dying of a horrible disease and unfortunately no cures. And we had the whole church praying and people, family throughout different states. And I was in the midst of a fast and prayer. And I was in my apartment by myself, just sitting there speaking to God. And I was laying on the floor with my face down and just crying and quietly saying to God, why hasn't she been healed yet? And my faith never wiltered or fluctuated or anything like that. But she was my mom, right?
Yes.
So in that, and I was 24 years old at the time. So in that, I feel the presence of God in my room, and my whole entire living room felt warmth, like the warmth of just your mom or your grandmother just holding you and loving you and telling me she's already healed. And I literally heard his voice, his audible voice. And I was like, I felt this presence like of peace. And he was like, she's already healed. If not here, she's already healed in heaven. And right there and then I was like, and it wasn't like, it was like literally his voice. And you knew it. If you have a walk with him, you know his voice.
Yeah.
And I just started crying, and it wasn't a cry of hurt.
Yeah.
It was a cry of rejoice. Wow. And happiness and glory and honor. And all I could do is in that quiet time, just sit there and cry a cry of thankfulness, because 28 years later, she did pass a few months later. But I know right now she's in the glory of God's hand. And that brings me peace every day I walk on this earth with everything that's going on. That there is a God.
Yeah.
And he hears us.
Alani, thank you so much. Boom, sister. That's why we call you the Boom Crew right there, guys. That's why. Coming up, we're going to get really honest about this issue of silence. Sometimes silence benefits us in the most amazing ways. When we're on the run, like Elijah, running for his life, it says in 1 Kings, running for his life. God speaks, but he's not in the fire. He's not in the wind. He's not in the earthquake. It's a still small voice. It's the unseen things that matter most. Silence is below the waterline. You know, it might be a discipline you need to be adopting today. Hang on.
Boom Crew, celebrate what God is doing in you. This is Carl and Crew Mornings.
It's an amazing story. Elijah's on the run. Jezebel's got him scared half to death. I'd have been afraid of her, too. She was a crazy lady.
She was a crazy lady, man.
And so here's what's funny. Isn't it amazing that we come off these spiritual conquests and then we find ourselves just getting throttled by Satan? Anyone else had that experience before?
Absolutely. Yep. 100%.
So Jezebel tells him, I'm going to do to you what you did the 450 prophets of Baal, because he put a sword through every one of them, by the way. Now, he had help. Because, by the way, when you have a great display of God's power, you know what? You find some helpers that come around you. Mm-hmm. So he had some help, but he had put the sword through these guys. They're dead, and now he is on the run, and he's sprinting. The text is clear. He ran for his life, 1 Kings, first few verses. He ran for his life and came to Beersheba, where it belongs to Judah. So now he's left Israel. He's in Judah, left his servant there. He went a day's journey into the wilderness, sat down under a broom tree, and he asked that he might die. It is enough now, O Lord. Take away my life. And he laid down and slept underneath this broom tree. And by the way, while he was there, an angel touched him and said to him, arise and eat. And he looked, and there was baked bread and a jar of water. I mean, and there's hot stones. So it's like, hey, looks like Frontera Grill showed up out here in the middle of nowhere. And so he's like chowing down on this stuff. And by the way, what happens? He eats. So he naps. Mm-hmm. He eats, drinks, and does what good dudes do that are tired. Sleeps again.
Hey, sometimes it's needed.
So he was exhausted. But here's the reality of this story. And this is what I want you to get. Rest, food, and drink can settle your basic needs, but they can't settle your soul. Have you ever noticed that, Boom Crew? You know what I mean, guys?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
You can get rest, you can get food, you can get drink, but sometimes your soul is not settled.
Yeah, if I'm taking a nap and because I need it and I'm exhausted and I'm really needing God to fill spiritual needs in my life, but I'm only settling for a nap, I'm going to wake up still anxious.
No, that's so true, man. I mean, I've woken up from a good long nap going, it's still there.
100%.
That's why, you know, self-care is a really popular term right now.
Yeah.
And I'm all for self-care, taking care of yourself, taking time for yourself. But if you don't take that next step of really encountering God, and you've just tried to, you know, take a spa day or get a nap or have some food or go take a vacation, all those things that are in that self-care category, they're good, but they're incomplete. And that's why I think the world always comes up lacking, because it's like, but I just took a vacation and I just did this.
Allie,
and I'm
you're nailed it.
Man, I still don't have peace, and I just came from Hawaii.
Yeah. I mean, It is so true. And as Christ followers, we can come off great spiritual conquests, be on the run, not running the race, being on the run. And we can be looking over our shoulder at financial issues, relational issues, betrayal issues. Last night I had something. I was looking over my shoulder about something that happened a number of years ago, and I started to get a little bit anxious. It can happen, guys.
Totally.
But here's the rest of the story. So for Elijah, food, drink, rest didn't settle his soul. What did? That story straight ahead.
New to the show? Stick around for a while. We're Carl and Crew Mornings.
So Elijah had his basic needs met, but his soul was still unsettled big time. And he came to a cave and he lodged there. And let me just tell you the story. He said, God, I am the only one who's walking with you. There is no one else that's walking with you. And you know what? Sometimes it feels like that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's one thing to feel alone, and it's another thing to hear the voice of God in that aloneness. And Elijah wasn't there yet. And God told him, go to this cave, and you go hang out in this cave, and I've got something to tell you. And God sent winds, but he wasn't in that wind. And God sent earthquakes, and he wasn't in the earthquakes. And God sent fire, but he wasn't in the fire. And then God whispered, and Elijah heard his voice. You know what God went on to tell him? He said, listen, I want you to head down the road, and you're going to see Elisha, and everything's going to be okay. And oh, by the way, Elijah, there's 7,000 that haven't bowed a knee to Baal, and they've not put their lips on the idol and kissed it. Wow. All I'm going to tell you is this morning, guys, and this is a promise I want to make to you. God's voice is most easily heard not in the winds of fury, no matter how crazy things are around you, not in the quakes of instability or the fires of testing, but sometimes God is best heard in the sound of silence. Yep. Isn't that an interesting little space? That little few seconds. Isn't that, let's do that again right there. Listen. That's some powerful stuff.
It is. How do you feel with that silence? Be honest with yourself. Does it kind of unnerve you a little bit to hear silence? It's a discipline for a reason.
Yeah, it is. And I got to tell you, man, last night I normally hit the hay. My phone's a dumb phone by 8 o'clock because I can't go down these stupid Twitter holes, man. That stuff is out of the pit. I'm telling you, man, some of these apps are out of the pit. And I can't go down those because going to bed mad, I found out, is not a good spiritual discipline.
No, it's not.
Dad, burn it. You don't wake up rested. But I have a book beside my, I got different books all the time, but I've been reading some of the old classic men and women that have gone before us, men and women that have gone before us, just reading just about their lives. And it's so inspiring. And usually I pass out with a smile on my face. But last night I just shut the book and I said, I'm speaking on silence tomorrow. Let's be quiet. And the Lord spoke to me, Allie. I just laid there perfectly silent in that room. And the Lord spoke to me. And he wants to speak to you guys. I don't know when you'll get it.
Yeah.
But go into a cave, turn off everything, and let God speak.
And it might take some time. I love that you shared that. Well, who was it who said that sometimes it takes him the first half hour on his walk just to like get his mind quiet?
Richard Foster.
Hey, I've been there where it's like, okay, come on, I'm trying to get quiet. And it takes some time. You got to sometimes wait for the silence.
Hey, Boom Crew, this is Matt Forte. Huddle up, because we're taking our next step with Jesus here on Carl and Crew in the Morning.
Super Dial, let's get a look at sports. What do you have?
Wasn't good for the Bulls yesterday. They could not make it 4 in a row, dropping one to Philly, 116-91. Off today for the Blackhawks, back in action. After being off, they visit the Capitals, and we do have March Madness Kicking off tonight, eight teams tonight and eight teams tomorrow. There's
one team tonight at 6 p.m. Central Time. I don't know what network it's going to want to be. It's going to be on, but I want everyone tuning into this game. It's
do.
A very important game.
It is.
The Arkansas Razorbacks are going to clobber UConn.
Okay.
God willing. They're really talented.
Good.
Did you know they've got a lot of NBA boys on this team?
They have a really good team.
Oh, boy, they got some
great
players.
Great coach.
Oh, Musselman is a hoot. He peeled off his shirt in front of God and everybody at the last game, and it's just an absolute hoot. So awesome. I thought I would call the Hogs, and Young Thunder did that earlier for us.
Yeah, tried.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
But Marianne from DeKalb called in. Marianne, you're with us right now. How you doing, Marianne?
Hey, I'm doing good, and I have my daughter Emily on the phone as well, who went to the University of Arkansas.
Okay. So, Marianne, you're a first-time caller, so the first time you're calling in to actually call the Hogs and do it right? Is that right?
Yes.
That's kind of embarrassing, Marianne, that your first call.
That's perfect.
No, it's actually great.
It's amazing.
Now, Marianne, I'm going to tell you right now, just for coming on and trying this, you've got a Carlin Crew prize pack coming your way. So I'm going to give you
one for you and one for your daughter.
Oh, you're giving two away.
Thank
see
you.
There?
We're
yeah,
giving daughters
as well.
How about them out? Don't leave us now. You didn't get the award yet.
Wait.
You got to hang on here. You got to call the Hogs. All right. You guys, do you want to clear your throat or anything like that? Or are you all good to go?
Emily, you good to go?
We're good to go.
All right. Let's call the Hogs.
Go
ahead.
Give us the context for where this is typically yelled out. Are people just walking around campus, Emily, yelling this out on like on the quad?
Cool.
Yeah, actually it is. In classes, sometimes a hog call will just start in the union and the quad everywhere, but definitely at games for
That's
sure.
Hilarious. That's fantastic.
Yeah, and there's arm motions with this, right, Emily?
There is, yeah. You slowly raise your hands and wiggle your fingers, and then when you yell out "Pig Stewie," you'll pull your arm back and do a fist in the air, and then do that three times, and yell in "Razorbacks" at the end.
I
that
love it.
Is fantastic.
So, choreography and everything.
Have you ever called in real hogs, Emily?
I have not. No, I'm from Chicago, and I did not grow up doing any of that.
That must have been extra strange, good girl.
Like what?
When you first went to Arkansas, did you think the calling the hogs was a funky thing, or just really cool, or what'd you think?
Yeah, I loved it. I embraced it 100%.
That's great.
Oh.
Well, hang on the phone, ladies. You each get a Carlin Crew prize pack today.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank
so
you.
Much.
You
guys really are great. Thank you so much.
Well, we thank you. Thank you.
Thank
Thanks
you
for
too.
Calling
for real.
I love that she said sometimes you're just walking around. You're in class and a call breaks out. You're
Can
on the
in class.
That's another world.
And there's choreography. I love it.
Guys, the whole stands do it. I've been at these hog games.
I get it at sporting events. I'm trying to picture what this looks like in a class.
I've never seen it
setting,
in class.
Where all of a sudden somebody just does a Jonathan and just starts calling
I will tell you this. Yeah, you when go. The Hogs won the first national champion or a national championship under Nolan Richardson, I don't know if you remember those days.
No.
They were just unbelievable ball club. Corliss Williamson played for him back in the day. These are names. You know that name?
Oh, I'm a basketball fan, so yes.
So, yeah, and Robert Lewis at one of the services at Fellowship Bible Church called the Hogs.
I love it.
And the whole place was calling the Hogs.
That's so great. Also, did you say Corliss Williams?
Corliss.
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 Okay.
Corliss. Thinking,
Corliss.
How do you like your Williams? Oh, I like mine cordless.
Corliss.
Yeah, it's Corliss.
Corliss.
He was a big player in the, the late 90s?
Yeah. Yeah, he was a player. But when we called the Hogs, I went down to Robert afterwards and I said, man, when you recruited me to join you here at Fellowship Bible Church, I didn't know we were going to do idol worship here on a Sunday service.
That's
it
great.
Was pretty fun. Hey, this is Carl with Carl and Crew, and I'm so grateful that you listened to this showcast. Thank you mostly for being part of the Boom Crew, As we help you take your next step with Jesus, you're a huge encouragement to us. We'll be here again live every weekday morning from 5 to 9 a.m. Godspeed.